I wonder if to you that story that Jesus told sounded familiar. The idea that, well, somebody's experience and livelihood would blossom in totally unexpected ways, that there in fact is so much that there's no place to put it all. You have to take the old buildings down in order to build larger ones to fit it all, because it's more than one can imagine. And then he stops and he says to himself, I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat and drink and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God. Let's have the ushers come forward and we'll take the offering, you know, right now. No. I don't know if you probably don't recognize this bus. This is one of the ancient ones. You wouldn't guess who it is. That's Epicurus. And, you know, some generations, even a long, long time before Jesus, a philosopher and a thinker taught that the highest good is to satisfy one's desires, to satisfy one's needs. Kind of the father in so many ways of ancient hedonism, not in a way that's just vulgar or debaucherous, an appetite for mere pleasure, but for the good things in life. So what is the saying, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow, what? Yeah. Earlier in Luke's gospel, Jesus has said to his friends, wherever your treasure is, there will your, what? Your heart be also. Can you make a little heart? Wherever your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Now it's kind of hard to put that back here, you know, where your wallet is. And Jesus has been busy. Since he said that, he has gone from encounter to encounter, from place to place, from community to community, working hard to turn upside down the whole system of values for his audience, working hard to upset the scales of worth and cost. They're not the same thing. Tony Campolo used to tell the story of the burglars who break into the big department store. And this is before the days of automated inventory and barcodes and all the rest. And so they go in there and they don't want to steal things. What they do is they go in there and they just kind of change around the price tags. And so what they do is, you know, a pair of socks that gets flipped with the brand new barbecue. Or they would take the tag off the watch and put that on a candy bar. Or the golf club's one, that goes on the gallon of milk. And you can imagine then the consternation of those who would arrive the next morning, realizing that their carefully devised system was upended. The story of the landowner. Jesus is careful to say that it's the land that does the producing, right? It's the land, and it's so abundant that the result it's not the result of some extra effort. It's not the result of some discipline or sacrifice or really savvy work on the part of the landowner. The land does the producing. It's worth remembering that in the story that Jesus tells, that the man is not a bad guy. In fact, it doesn't say that he's greedy. The story that Jesus tells doesn't say that this landowner is dishonest. Jesus doesn't say that he's a slave driver or an exploiter of the toil of others. In fact, this would have been the kind of guy in Jesus' time that everybody, well, would have admired. This is the kind of guy that everybody would have held in some esteem. In fact, some would have suggested that in that system of ancient piety, this is the kind of guy you want to be, because this is the kind of guy that must be doing it right. This is the kind of guy that must be pleasing God. Look at all the things that are coming his way. It's the ancient version of the prosperity gospel. This idea that somehow wealth and prosperity and abundance, all that is a sign of God's favor. But is that all we need? The man is prudent. The man is mature. He is able to delay gratification and save for a later day, save for a harder day. So why is it that God would call him, "You fool," with an exclamation point? Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow, what again? We die. Jesus' audience in the marketplaces of Galilee, Jesus' audience so long ago in the streets of Jerusalem, Jesus' audiences generations ago on the shores of that ancient lake, are they like us at all? In even any conceivable way, do we organize our lives and value things in the same way that they do? Jesus has an audience today, and it's you and me. Has an audience today in the halls of government, has an audience today in the traffic on the internet. Jesus' audience is today in the daily transactions of contemporary commerce. Are they like us? Are we like them? I thought of three A's, and these may or may not speak to that, and they may or may not be true for you, but maybe this is kind of just confession on my part. There are three A's, and I would call them my values or my ethos, my impulse. Each of them seem to give shape to the way that I think about my life. See if they resonate with you. The first A is accumulation. This urge to possess and collect and hedge against disaster or loss. You know, even to the point of hoarding or hiding or hallowing stuff. It gives the illusion of being safer. One of the fastest growing industry these days, you know it and I do too, is the construction of storage facilities. You know, how much more room do we need? My dad turns 85 next month. And he's got a bunch of tongue-in-cheek sayings, but one of his favorite is, "The one who dies with the most toys wins." Now, my dad's smart. He knows that's not true. And he knows that I know that's not true. But we say it partly to tease. Maybe we say that together to remind ourselves that it's not true. And yet we give tremendous energy to acquisition of things. We value stuff. We make it a sign of our own value and our own success. How about another A? See if this one resonates with you. It works out. I made them start with A so we could remember them. But how about advantage? That's one of the drivers in my life. In a world that wants us to understand ourselves as producers/consumers, in a world that wants for us to frame things, to interpret our lives and the purpose of our lives as competitors with each other, then the measure of a good life has to be whether or not we got ahead. Right? If we really are just producers and consumers, if that defines our being, then the measure of success has to be somehow outperforming the other guy. In this big contest, the prize is in taking home the most. To ascend the ranks, to climb the ladder, how does that work? Who do I have to step on to do that? I think that the world needs us all to believe that we're locked into a life and death competition in a zero-sum game. There's one pie, and you got to go get the biggest slice you can. Therefore, every encounter is an exchange. Every encounter is a transaction. Every encounter, it's a deal. Another A. See if this one feels where you are. See if this one speaks to what drives anything in your life. I called it autonomy. It's this idea that we prize self-determination, that our heroes are self-made persons. They rely on their instincts and their market savvy. That the measure of our autonomy or our agency, that is the ability to compel the outcome of our own lives, well, what are the tools you need for that? Well, you got to have choice and independence. You got to have personal freedom and success. You got to have access and speed and power. Not only do I not need you, but I don't even need to talk to you. You're just in the way. What did you notice about Jesus' landowner? Where again did the growth and the abundance come from? It's pretty clear from the text that Jesus wants us to understand that it was the land. It was the land that produced so abundantly, as if to say, you know, it's from God, don't you? That's occurred to you, hasn't it? That it's not because of this landowner's deserving. It's not because of this landowner's effort or worthiness. So it's really interesting, because then in Jesus' story, then he starts to talk about a conversation that the landowner has. But who's the conversation that the landowner has? Who's that conversation with? I'll read it for you. The land of a rich man produced abundantly, and he thought to himself, what should I do? For I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my... You see where this is going. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Self, relax, eat, drink, and be merry. He's talking to himself. In fact, the only time the landowner is talking is to himself. The only conversation he has is with himself. He doesn't understand any relationships with other people. He doesn't seem aware of the context of his larger community. He seems like totally oblivious, even to the presence of the land. Or the one who gave him the abundance. No mind to the most ancient requirements of law to make room at the edges of the fields for the gleaners. Remember those who make their livelihood along the edges, the margins of life? He can't see past the fence. He just can't see. All his plans, all of his preparation, for what? All of his plans, all of his preparation for what? There's no more years. All of his plans, all of his preparation for what? There's no more harvests. All of his plans, all of his preparation for what? There won't even be one more morning. So why does God call him a fool? Earlier this week, I went over to visit with Floyd Lindbaugh. And if you know Floyd, you know that he's recently had his 96th birthday. And he's less and less able to get around. In fact, he can't be with us, and he longs for our company. So many go by and say hi and visit with him there in his living room. He's on hospice care and has palliative arrangements set up for him because he knows this is kind of the last season. So I went over and I said, Floyd, you know, I wanted to come over and say hi. I'm going to be leaving on vacation for a little while. And, you know, I wanted to check in. He says, oh, so you thought maybe if you didn't see me now, I wouldn't be here when you got back again. Is that what you're telling me? And we both kind of laughed. And we started to talk about his life. We talked about his travels and experiences. We talked about his work. But the truth is, we talked mostly about his relationships, his friendships and his family, those beloved ones, the people he has breakfast with. That's the wealth of his life. That's the precious things in his being. Jesus seems bent. Jesus seems busy liberating us from accumulation and advantage and autonomy. Jesus is busy liberating us from death, to see one another, to love one another. That's where life really is. Okay, now we're going to take the offering. No. It'll be after the hymn, you know. But you get it, right? That life is larger than this. Amen.